It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday.
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Yes, it is Gasper Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. If you're just joining us, programming note, no Chris Gasper. And frankly, this is the first time I feel like I'm doing this show in a month, even though it's been a couple of weeks. I was away in St. Louis for Games 3 and 4 of the Stanley Cup Final, and that's where Chris is. He's out in that barren hellhole covering Game 6. We have Ty Anderson alongside, he of 98.5 The Sports Hub, the Swiss Army Knife of 98.5 The Sports Hub, as I like to refer to you as, because, you know, you write, you cover the Bruins, you're always writing at 98.5thesportshub.com. Check out his writing there. It's great stuff. Always was, even before you joined us. I always followed along your career, Ty, and now you're getting more airtime. I hear you're on with Toucher and Rich, and here you are filling in for Gasper today, and I'm happy that you are. Let's go back to bitching about the Bruins. Game 6.
Love it.
Tomorrow night, is it as simple as top line, your big four of Krejci and Pastrnak and Marchand and Bergeron, they just got to show up, finally do something, someone get on the board, and that's how they win this game?
They have to. That's what it is, because I think you know what you're going to get out of the third line and the fourth line, those players, whatever the line combinations are, but you know you can trust them and rely on them. It is Marchand and Bergeron and Pastrnak and Krejci. These guys, their game five I thought was horrible. I really did. Watching them overpassing, trying to make dipsy doos on what was basically slush. You're not playing on good ice conditions. You're not playing your game. You're overthinking things. It reminds me, not to cross sports here, but when a team goes down by 10 points in the NBA and they just start chucking up horrible three-pointers.
Yeah, bombs
like,
away.
It's like, guys, no, that's not going to work. It really felt like they were trying to cheat the game in game five once they were down by one goal. One goal, guys. It's not the end of the world. Like, trust yourself. Trust your skills. You don't have to do takeover mode. You know, you have to sort of just play the game and let it play out. You're going to get your chances. Clearly, if this team could bury a rebound, they would have won that game. There were so many rebounds in that first period that they just did not capitalize on. It went the wrong way. There were a ton of passes to backs and forcing players to have backhand retrievals. It's just they're overthinking things right now. They're in their head way too much. So boil it down to the basics, and I think you should win this game.
Yeah, at this point, everyone's banged up, and there's part of me that can't wait. I can't wait to see, you know, what the MASH unit's going to read like when this series ends on both sides, but specifically with the Bruins, because I'm sure you've heard things. I've heard things about certain injuries for certain guys beyond what has been reported. But there's really no excuse at this point. It does feel like there's a collective tightness. And I do wonder, you know, because as well as they played, and there was a jump, and maybe that was because of the building. Maybe that was because of the return of Zdeno Chara after the broken jaw. There was a jump in their game in that first period. And then when they couldn't get on the board, it's like they got frustrated and deflated. And that caught up with them. And there's been too much of that, especially with guys like Marchand, who just feels a bit snake bit too when he hits the top of the crossbar. Was that in the third period, second or third period in that game on Thursday night? It's like, oh boy, like that's got to even weigh on him even more, because I think he's in his own head. Like, that's a guy specifically I think is just overthinking, or he's too amped up, or he's just angry. He's just got to relax and play.
Yeah, he hit the post at the 4:50 mark of the first period.
That's when it was. Okay.
And then 10 seconds later, Pastrnak came in and rang a one-timer, I think off Binnington's mask. And those were two great chances back-to-back. Yeah. And they fell by the wayside, and you're like, well, That's not a good sign. You can always kind of tell how their night is going to go as a line based on what happens in the first period. I know that's an easy thing to say, but when they get in trouble early and they don't capitalize on their chances, and then you sort of see them disappear, you're like, uh-oh, here it comes. Now they're in trouble, and they never found their game. I thought Krejci as well, he was just passing all night. You got to take a shot, dude. He was trying to pass the puck into the net, which doesn't happen. Very rarely does that ever happen.
He strikes me more than anybody else as the one guy who's truly trying to avoid contact. Anytime Ty, especially in this last game, he brings the cup, brings the puck into the St. Louis zone. Like I expect it to come off his stick in a matter of seconds. It's like he's trying to avoid a hit. He doesn't want any kind of contact. He seems more rattled than anybody else. DeBrusk was a guy, we talked going into the game when you did the final hour of Felger and Maz on Canal Street at the Fan Fest on Thursday. I basically agreed with you. You could put four names into a hat and say who's been the most disappointing. DeBrusk had done nothing. Well, now, okay, he's got off the schneid. He scored that goal. Maybe that he'll break out. But after him, I think Krejci's right behind him. You could go with Pastrnak and Marchand, too. There's, you know, any of those names. But those two specifically have been brutal in this series.
Yeah, and I didn't love DeBrusk's comments after the game. He said, they asked him, you know, do you hope this goal sort of opens the floodgates, if you will? And he said, well, I wouldn't say I'm on fire. And it's like,
oh, God, dude.
It's like, man.
Even if you got to trick yourself.
Yeah.
The power of positive thinking.
The confidence is the biggest thing. And he didn't even want to give himself any credit, like, or say, hey, I think my game's coming around now. Yeah. You know, this is the start of it. But he just seemed kind of like he was a little timid almost. And it's like, dude, you got to have that confidence, because when DeBrusk has his swagger and his confidence, he's one of the most dangerous players on the ice for the Bruins. And maybe you can say one of the most dangerous players in the league on that left side. So he needs to have that confidence. The whole team needs it. They need to shake this crap off that's happened in games 4 and 5 and just get back to who they are, because we've seen it. We've seen it again and again and again. When this team is feeling themselves, they are an absolute freight train.
Have you heard any update on Grislyk? You know, he was in the non-contact jersey, and then Thursday, ahead, you know, the morning practice, he got rid of that. Sounded like he was going to be good to go, but didn't end up getting cleared, didn't play. Do you think he plays tomorrow?
So he's expected to practice today. They're going to hit the ice at 1:30 our time. So he's expected to hit the ice and practice, and they'll have a read on him, how he's feeling. I think what happened is, he skated on Wednesday and Thursday, but he didn't clear the concussion protocol. He still has one more hurdle to get over here. The fact that he was traveling in an airplane is kind of comforting, I think, because if you have a really bad concussion or the symptoms are bad, you're not traveling like that. So it is about the skate today and how he feels. And typically this team, they don't do morning skates, they do optional skates. So maybe tomorrow morning he goes out there and then he has to see how he feels. But today's the big test, I think, in that respect, to see if he's able to play in Game 6.
What did you make of the return of Zdeno Chara, outside of the, you know, emotional pop both for the fans and the building? And I think that what you saw in terms of the play in the first period, did you think he played his normal game?
I thought he was good enough, given all things considered. I would say this, that if he's 100%, he's not 100%, but I think you saw in Game 5 he can play. I would be curious to see if they go back to 6D now. Because I thought that going at 7 kind of took some of the guys out of their rhythm just a little bit. So I think that if you can rely on him to be one of your 6, you may want to go at 6 for tomorrow night. So, but overall, I thought he was fine. It was some little things that he struggled with, but he was struggling with those before the broken jaw, like clearing the puck or outlet passes. That's been a problem for him all postseason. So there were a few things that I wanted him to clean up, but overall, I thought given the circumstances, he was not a minus for you, for your game, I think, by the night's end.
It felt like to me he kind of got caught up in the wash a little bit behind the net on that first goal.
He did.
You know, that was...
But we've seen that, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I'm talking in terms of, like, his jaw. Like, did it really limit him in any way? I don't think so. I think the fact that he went out and found contact right away was kind of comforting. Like, oh, okay, he's testing himself, and he didn't back down. There was that one play where it looked like he took an elbow up high, and I was like, uh-oh,
yeah,
here it comes. He's going to be knocked out now. But no, I thought he was okay. McAvoy was the one that I thought left a lot to be desired in that game, which we haven't said a lot. We haven't said that about him a lot this postseason. So,
well, in Game 4, too, he was asleep on the Tarasenko goal. Like, that was the one. It's like he's had a bad couple of games now.
Exactly.
And overall in the series, he's been, eh.
No, and you look at the Carolina series and the Columbus series, I thought McAvoy gave you a huge lift.
Definitely.
In both those series, and it's sort of been very hot and very cold in this series. So you want to see a big game out of him, because let's be real here. He is the driving force of that pairing now. It used to be Chara. Now it's McAvoy. So you can get away with Chara having a so-so night if McAvoy plays to his standards. But if not, yeesh, that is a bad pairing.
How do you feel about tomorrow night overall?
I'm feeling better. I'm feeling oddly good about it the closer we get to it. And then, sure enough, 7:58 p.m., I'm going to be throwing up into my hat.
Full-on paranoia.
Yeah, it's going to be great. But I have to trust that this team, they can shake this off because I've seen it for three rounds now, that they've been able to shake off bad losses and perform well on the road. So I want to see something similar to that, but it's going to be the opening 10 minutes, I think, that will really dictate how I feel about this game. I thought that, go back to the Toronto game six, that their last must-win game six, they get a power play goal off the jump. They take advantage of the bounces that were given to them, and off they went. So you need something similar here in this game, and I got a feeling you're going to get it based on what happened in game five, the way you got screwed.
Yeah.
I got a feeling that they're going to call everything very tight.
Yeah, so I said it yesterday with Felger and Maz. I said it earlier with you, Ty, in the first hour of the show. I think two things can be true about Game 5 is that you continue to get nothing out of your top players and your top line, Pastrnak, Marchand, Bergeron, and throw Krejci in there as well. So you can be frustrated about that. And I think you can also be apoplectic and extremely frustrated about the poor officiating in Game 5 and how it affected that game, specifically the non-call and the Achari trip. And you have Bozak literally looking at Kelly Sutherland, the referee, making his case like, I don't know what I just did. I don't know what you saw. And the arm doesn't go in the air. There's no penalty. And the Bruins, you know, the one thing that did kind of bug me about that, they should have played to the whistle. They kind of let their guard down, and bang, it's 2-0. That affects the game. It totally affected the game. We would have been looking at 1-0. Bruins on a power play with about 10 and change left. I'd like to think, I have to think, I'm gonna weigh in the DeBrusque goal. They tie that game. We should have went to overtime, and who knows what happened. But they got jobbed there. They got jobbed on that call, and you got lack of production from your best players. Both things can be true.
Absolutely, and it's similar to if a goaltender loses a game 1-0, you can blame the goaltender, but you can also say, hey, well, they should have scored a goal or two. You know, like yeah. It's not. Take culture is destroying us as people. That we get boxed into these corners where. Where you're like, you have to, this has to be your take. It can't be both. It has to be this. It's like, no, both things can be true, and both things are true. We can say the referees had a terrible game. They did. We can say the Bergeron line had a terrible game. They did. We can also admit the obvious. That goal directly impacted the game. This is worse than last year, where it was Tampa Bay and Boston, and it was the McAvoy got taken out of the play, and yep. Stamkos scored. Like, that is different. This was as blatant a penalty as you've ever seen in your entire life. Like, this has been a penalty for 10 years now. It's been a penalty in every play.
It's been a bad run for the officials in the NHL throughout this postseason. And another thing, too, just to look at in that game, you have no call on the hit on Marcus Johansson, but you ultimately have a suspension for Ivan Barbashev, who was headhunting on that call, but there's no penalty called in that game. Oscar Sundquist gets popped a game, too, for his hit on Grizzlick that knocked him out. So it's funny. You look at two guys that have been suspended, but you ultimately have 2 minutes of penalties from that? Huh? Like, how does that even make any sense? It doesn't. It's been a bad postseason for the NHL officials. And I think it's okay to bitch about that. I don't think that makes you too much of a homer. Like, that was egregious what happened with those two plays in particular that night on Thursday in Game 5. The two on Krug, I can live with. I think people are getting a little too nitpicky with that to me, Ty, because, you know, those type of things, I think, you know, you should almost kind of swallow the whistle at this point in the postseason. They were happening, but you can't get them all. But I'm sorry, the Achari thing and the Johansson thing, you got to blow the whistle on that. Like, that's where people, if you're a casual fan and you're just tuning into this, I think that's a turnoff. Like, you look at that and like, okay, this is either fixed or this product just stinks. Because they have their heads collectively up their rear ends.
So you know why they're nitpicking it, though? Is because the standard has been set in other games. Like the Connor Clifton targeting the head or whatever on Tarasenko in Game 4 leads you to believe, okay, well, if that's the targeting the head, then the actual head contact here should be a penalty. So when people are losing their minds, it's not out of nowhere. It's not out of pure fandom. It's out of looking at what's been called to this date and saying, okay, well, this should be a penalty in Game 5, right? If all things are equal here, this is how this should be called each and every game. We haven't had that. What we talked about earlier, it's been every other game has been tight. The other one's been loose, whatever, however you want to say it. But it's killing the fans slowly, mentally, and it's killing the players on the ice because they don't know what they can get away with, what they can't. And finding that line has been impossible, I think, for both teams. It's been easier for the Blues, though, since Berube opened his trap after Game 3. So there's an obvious frustration element there, too, for the Bruins.
Yeah, and I want to know whether or not that frustration is going to maybe boil over in Game 6. You were in the locker room after the game talking to some of the Bruins, so we'll get your feedback on that. And also more on the suspension of Ivan Barbashev. That came down late last night. We'll get to all that. And your calls. You want to pitch about the Bruins. Your concerns going to Game 6 tomorrow night in St. Louis, 617-779-0985. McCone, we haven't heard from you yet on this and your opinions of this series so far. We'll get all that coming up right after this here on Gasper and Murray with Ty Anderson today here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Thursday night in Boston, Blues forward Ivan Barbashev delivered an illegal check to the head of Bruins forward Marcus Johansson. As the video shows, off a face-off in the Blues' end, Barbashev gains possession of the puck in the corner and quickly chips it up the wall. Johansson intercepts the puck and moves down the wall on the attack as Barbashev comes off his man to close the gap. As Johansson releases a shot on goal, Barbashev delivers a high, forceful hit that makes Johansson's head the main point of contact on a hit where such head contact was avoidable. This is an illegal check to the head. It is important to note that the head is the main point of contact on this play. While we agree that Barbashev's arm does make contact with the left arm of Johansson, the brunt of the impact of this hit is delivered by Barbashev's shoulder directly into the head of Johansson. It is also important to note that the head contact on this play is avoidable. While Johansson is in the process of shooting the puck, he does not materially change the position of his head or body just prior to contact, in a way that significantly contributes to the head being the main point of contact. If Barbashev wishes to deliver this check, he must take an angle of approach that hits through Johansson's near shoulder or core, rather than an angle that picks Johansson's head with his shoulder. To summarize, this is an illegal check to the head. The Department of Player Safety has suspended Ivan Barbashev for one playoff game.
Love the whoosh that you get with those videos. That came down late yesterday, right around 6:30, in the NHL Department of Player Safety. They're very thorough breakdown, and they're always very thorough breakdown, of the suspension of Ivan Barbashev, forward for the Blues, who is out tomorrow night in Game 6 for his blatant and obvious headshot on Marcus Johansson. Again, if they have the thorough breakdown there, Ty, it's Ty Anderson in for Chris Gasper here on Gasper Murray this afternoon. They could see that. And how did the ref not see it when it's right in front of him a Thursday night and the arm doesn't go in the air? There's no penalty. I don't know.
He's staring right at it. If you watch replay, he's staring right at it. And it's like, how do you miss that? How do you get to this level? Not only the NHL level, but Game 5 of the Stanley Cup in a tied series 2-2. How do you get to that level and be like, I didn't see anything there?
Well, it's because
totally fine.
Craig Berube has obviously had an effect on the officials in these last couple of games. He bitches about it last Sunday before he and his Canadian buddies go get bombed at the Cardinals and Cubs game in St. Louis. He bitches about it and then sits there smugly Thursday night after his team wins and says, I have no problem with the officials. Yeah, because it's favored you. We're all frustrated, Ty. The players, or at least Bruce Cassidy, was rightfully frustrated, and some of the players were Thursday night. You were in the locker room afterwards. How do they get over that? Do you think they'll get over that heading into tomorrow night's game?
They get over it by doing what they've done all postseason, and just they're going to go out there and play their game. They have to. They can't. You know, the idea of focusing on what happened in the past is not something that this team has ever tried to do. I think that's what's made them a good team. Throughout the adversity of this season, whether it's losing players in game, being without their captain or their best forward for long stretches, they've always found a way to move forward, and I think that's what they're going to have to do here. And you just hope that the psychology of it's not too deep in their own head at this point, right? Two games, two losses, you have to just kind of focus on what you can control. I know it's a cliche and it's easy to say from this point of view, but again, we've talked about this. This Bruins team, they're a great team when they play with their head on right, you know, and you can't worry about the officials, what they may or may not call. And I think that's been, you know, to the Felger's point, I don't agree with the fact they've been diving or flopping, but I think there has been times where they get hit and they look to the official versus continuing to play. And you have to just not do that. You have to understand that these guys are bozos. They're incompetent. They're not going to call everything. And you got to just keep on playing.
So that's one of them in particular that comes to mind was not the the hold on Krug, where Krejci ultimately stopped that goal. The other one, the hit from the kid from Salem. that was one. It's like Krug was looking at the official, like he was waiting for a call there. And like that, you know, that can be a detriment sometimes. Like they just got to play their game and get the hell out of their own heads.
And part of that is gamesmanship. And I think there's a level of that you should stick with, right? Because again, these guys are dumb. If you can catch them, go for it, you know. But you can't look to it and get taken out of the play or let it take away from what you do well. So they have to find that healthy balance. I think there is a balance to be found there. And this team is smart enough and they're veteran savvy enough to be able to do that.
Tim McCone,
I hope they do it.
We got your opinions on all the Celtics stuff. How have you felt about how this series has played out so far?
I'm a lot like what Ty mentioned earlier at this point, too. I mean, we've seen them do it before. They won in Toronto in a game six, so I'm not counting this team out. But certainly, you know, game five was incredibly frustrating the whole time. So we'll wait and see what happens here coming up.
All right, let's go to you. 617-779-0985. Any leftover thoughts you have from Thursday night's frustrating loss? So the Blues go up 3-2, and your thoughts on game six tomorrow night in St. Louis. Frank the Tank, good afternoon, Frank. Hey.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good.
Look, real quick on Berube, I think what pisses a lot of people off around here and something that just Felger just and Jim, you know how much I like Felger, but, I mean, he's just being a prick. With this whole, you know, the Bruins are diving. They're all diving. Everybody's doing it. I don't understand why he just always focuses on the Bruins. But the thing that I think pisses people off around here about the comments that Berube made is that basically the penalties were pretty much even for both teams going through the first three games. It's just that your team got pantsed for their stupid penalties that they were taking because the Bruins were out skating them. And I think that's how the Bruins are going to come back and win this series. You've got to outskate St. Louis. You have to. They're bigger. They're meaner. Yes, that's true. But I've always said it. If you want to stop a fast team, you knock them on their ass. Well, if you skate fast enough, they're not going to catch you. So the Bruins got to get those pucks in deep. I know it's a cliche, but that's why the fourth line has been effective. They've been able to cycle that puck. And get some shots on this goalie. He is not the second coming of Ken Dryden. And, you know, what about Danton Heinen? He's absolutely been an absolute no-show in every single one of these games. I mean, this is where I miss Chris Wagner. You know, I would rather see him in there than Danton Heinen. I know Heinen's not, you know, your 50-goal scorer, but you're on those lines to produce something, buddy. You know, let's get your head out of your ass and try to help out the team.
Thanks for the call, Frank. Thoughts on the quiet one, Danton Heinen there, Ty?
Well, he's been good defensively. That's the problem.
So it's funny, I remember even watching the games in St. Louis, I was like, well, you know, he's good in his own zone. It's everywhere else. That's where you see the quiet game of Danton Heinen.
Well, did you know this, that they had in game five, he played like seven and a half minutes or so of five-on-five or even strength time, and the Blues did not have a single shot on net during those 7 minutes. That's, if you're not scoring, that's kind of important. Like, and I hate to be that guy, like, to justify a player with zeros across the board right now, but he's a good defensive forward. And, again, on the road, PK situations, I think you need players like that. You know, this series hasn't really had a 5-4 game. It hasn't had the big offensive explosion. So if you have to win a tight game, being able to trust that player in those situations becomes kind of important. You don't play more than 10 minutes, but I'm not hating him as much as people have been saying Carson Kuhlman. They're not going to play Carson Kuhlman.
Yeah.
It's game six. It's a must-win game six. They're not going to put him in. That'd be crazy.
Let's go to Chris in Medford. You're next here with Ty Anderson and Jim Murray. Hey, Chris.
Gentlemen, how are you today?
Good. What's up?
So as I sit on the side of my house here and listen to my neighbor flush the toilet, I'm getting aggravated because if I'm the Bruins, and I'm not, obviously, I put a close-up picture of Perron when he scores the goal on everybody's locker, and just look at that French-Canadian weenie's face. That's enough. That should give you enough drive for the next game to skate through the big checks and stuff like that. I just wanted you guys' thoughts on that, and I think the Bruins, if they get through the next game, the Cubs are in seven. There's no way to lose it in Boston. God bless America.
Thanks, Chris. I mean, there's all kinds of things I think that from this series you could use as motivating factors, from Perron's face to why is the defenseman, you guys are effed, why is his name?
Pat Maroon.
Yeah, Pat Maroon, coming, you know, big rig coming by the, you know, the in game two saying you guys are effed, that, to Craig Berube sitting there smugly after Thursday night's win and saying, oh, no, I have nothing to say about the officials. I think that they're doing a fine job. Paraphrasing, but it's essentially what he said when he bitched about them to change the series after game three.
The two headshots.
Yeah.
You know, like, do you really want to be this gutless team? Like, is that what you want to be? Do you want to be known as that? Because people are going to look back on this. And what pisses me off is that we wouldn't even be talking about this if Chris Wagner and Kevin Miller were healthy in the lineup. Because
right.
that would balance this crap all out. It really would. So that's frustrating. That part of it's very frustrating. But I'd like to think this team is not going to get dummied by these bums. Like, the St. Louis team, I'm sorry, they're not good. It's not a good team. They're winning games, but they're not a good team. They have two forwards that I look at and go, oh, they can make a difference. And they have, but you're helping them make a difference. You're not playing the way that you need to. You're not playing to your standard that you've set for 82 games in three rounds. You're rolling over to these bums.
And that would be O'Reilly and Tarasenko, I would hope.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Those are two guys. O'Reilly's had a great series and has been awesome in the last couple of games. But I'm mostly with you. Like, I don't know. It just... But it would be so frustrating to see this Bruins season go down like this and then... kind of have to look at them as the 2011 Vancouver Canucks. Like, they were the more talented team, but you just got bodied. You got beat up. That's what the Bruins did to them in that series in 2011, and that's what's happening to the Bruins now. Your thoughts on Game 6 tomorrow night? Want to hear from you, 617-779-0985. Or, hey, you still want to bitch about the officiating in Thursday night's game? I'll take it. 617-779-0985. Tim McCone here to get you caught up with the Sports Hub headlines. What's going on over at Fenway? Who's in? Who's out? Seems like they're dealing with some real injury issues there with the Red Sox right now. He's going to tell you about that. And then back to you and more Bruins talk here with Gasper Murray. But no, Gasper, it's Ty Anderson in for Chris today here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Bergeron's going to lean in for the draw with 7 seconds left against O'Reilly. Bergeron wins it again. Near point, it's Krejci. Fires. Binnington the save. Rebound squirts to Steen. He'll skate it far side. The St. Louis Blues come up with a victory in Game 5. 2-1 in regulation. It is a tainted victory for the St. Louis Blues, but they have now put themselves one win away from their first ever Stanley Cup title.
Oh, tainted win for the Blues. Judd Surratt with the final call of the frustrating loss to the Blues in Game 5 Thursday night at the Garden. Jim Murray, Ty Anderson. Here on 98.5 The Sports Hub, and you at 617-779-0985. Your thoughts on Game 5. You still want to bitch about the officiating, the lack of production from the best players in the Bruins, the top line, Pastrnak, Marchand, Bergeron, even David Krejci. We'll take your calls on that and your thoughts heading into Game 6 tomorrow night in St. Louis at the Enterprise Center. 617-779-0985. Matt in Nashua, you're next up here on Gasper Murray with Ty Anderson today.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Oh, not too much. I just want to bring up the point that Tuukka Rask made the comment about the officiating after the puck in the net against the Columbus series. Mm-hmm. How that didn't affect the game that much at the time, but it could come back and bite him in the future. We all thought that kind of happened in St. Louis with the hand pass, but it looks like it kind of affected us now.
Well, Matt, one of my concerns is, you know, so we took a call from frequent caller Mike and Woburn earlier today. And Ty, he brought up a good point. With as physical as the Blues have been, and you now have had two guys suspended, with Ivan Barbashev being the latest for a cheap headshot on Marcus Johansson, and then you had Oscar Sundquist last week suspended for a game. If it gets to a Game 7, the way this thing has been officiated and the way that it, you know, has been throughout the playoffs all year, what do they get to lose for headhunting or playing a little bit dirty and cheap in Game 7 when all they'd be facing is, what, maybe a few-game suspension the following season when the Cup is on the line? Like, who the hell cares? Like, that's something that concerns me.
Yeah, there's no reason for them to stop playing the way they've played. There's none. None at all. And the NHL has made their bed with this. And, hey, by the way, Berube spoke today. Do you know what he said?
Oh, please. Tell me.
He said, we were the least penalized team through the first three rounds.
I'm so tired of hearing this from this guy. He really is. He's like a supervillain. He's a thug. He was a thug as a player. Again, seventh all-time of penalty minutes. He was a thug player, and this is what he's become. He's a supervillain as a coach. Oh, he drives me crazy. I can't stand him.
He's obsessed with this stat.
Yeah.
He's obsessed with it. And I don't even know if it's like it's actually accurate. Because there's one thing between being the least penalized and having you know, a penalty advantage over your opponent. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, those are two different stats. It's not like, well, yeah, you weren't whistled for a lot of penalties, but that still means you could, you know, you had an advantage over your opponents, or however you want to phrase it. So, but yeah, he's obsessed with the stat that because they were the least penalized team in the
first
few rounds,
they shouldn't be penalized any further.
They are incapable of taking penalties. That's how that works, you know?
Yeah. Let's go to Bill in the car with a thought on this. Hey, Bill.
Hey, guys, how are you? First of all, he's wrong about that. The Bruins and another team are the least penalized team, but whatever. This is what ticks me off, that sometimes when Belichick does this, where he keeps his mouth shut and he allows other people to dictate the story, sometimes you have to respond. The Bruins should have responded stronger right away when Berube made those inaccurate, wrong, false comments. I don't know how you do it, Jim. You're a great guy. I don't know how you can sit next to Maz and Felger. When I hear them talk after a loss of a big team, I have to turn it. It's almost like you listen to your mother-in-law after you just divorced their daughter. It's so painful. And it's not like I want to say we. You know, that whole asinine statement that they make. And, Jim, if you want to wear a Bruins jersey, you wear it. You pull it over Maz's head and kick the crap out of him. I'm so tired of these little dweebs. My God, you want to wear it, you wear it. You're right, they're headhunting. There's nothing that's going to stop them at this point. And the Bruins can't play that game because they're not built for it. Maz says, just get up. These guys are like a foot taller than them. They're not. They built this team for today's NHL. And it puts the Bruins at a disadvantage if they're going to call the games that way.
Thanks for the call, Bill. I can understand the frustration. Sometimes I feel it, too. I did yesterday. That's why I was saying both things can be true. You can be pissed about the officiating that jobbed the Bruins, especially on the no-call on Achari, and you can be pissed at the top line. Both things can be true. But, you know, as you said, it's we live in take culture now. You got to be dug in. There's not much of a gray area. But no calls for violence. We don't need that in terms of the show and show-on-show violence.
It almost happened to you the other day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got to say, if there is a Game 7, I can't say I'm going to be that pumped to be out at FanFest to do that show. We had one guy that was a little too into it and maybe had too much of a problem with Mike and Tony. And like, okay, like we can understand. We can piss some of you guys off sometimes, but like, don't take it too seriously. If you're that affected that you actually want to strike out at one of us, you should probably be in prison. So that got to be a bit much. And whatever terrible band that they had playing at the FanFest was all the way up. And I had to scream my headlines and scream at the end. I couldn't hear. My head buzzed for like 3 hours afterwards. I've about had enough, Ty.
Rock and roll, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Here comes some crazy train. You're like, why? Why does anyone want this right now?
There is few things. I hate a lot of things in life, Ty. But if there's one thing, it's right up at the top, maybe top five. It's bad cover bands that play Sublime. And wouldn't you know, that's what I had to deal with in that last hour of Felger and Maz during the Fan Fest. And I know it's for the fans, it's for the people there. But me, specifically, I couldn't hate anything more. And they were all the way up, and I couldn't hear a damn thing. All right, enough of my bitching. Zach in D.C., go ahead.
Hey, guys, hope you're doing well. Yeah, I'm just... I'm calling now. The Bruins, it feels like they're done. Even if they go in and win today, just the way they've been playing, the way they've let the Blues dictate everything. And I mean, just with the most frustrating thing of everything has been, with the exception of games 1 and 3, even when the Bruins are at their worst, they're playing the most terrible game they've played, they're still within like a goal or two of being able to beat them. And it's so frustrating, because if the top line would give you anything, something, anything, then it feels like the Bruins could at least be up 3-2 at this point. But they've just been zero. They've been blank. And instead we have to watch them do these cutesy passes back and forth, trying to get each other, and Marchand trying to hold the puck for 5 seconds at his wing before passing it up front again. It's so frustrating. So I'm calling it now. They're done. It sucks, because they deserve more than this. Chara, for him being a Warrior, they deserve so much more than this.
Thanks for the call, Zach. I can understand your frustration. Look, I don't feel great about tomorrow night, but I've been wrong about so much lately about these local teams. What the hell do I know? I called the Red Sox dead last year, and that, you know, I mocked the win total, and well, they shoved that right down my throat. Same for the Patriots. I gave them no chance in the AFC Championship game. They win that at overtime. I liked them against the Rams. But still, be that as it may, I didn't give them much of a chance in what I thought was a lost season. I don't feel great about tomorrow night. I hope I'm wrong, because the resiliency with the Bruins this year throughout the season, Ty, it has been real. I have to think that they're probably going to get some of the benefits of the calls, I would like to think, going into tomorrow night with the way that Game 5 played out. But the caller's right. Like, even in the losses, the last two games, as frustrating as they've been and as bad as they've played, they've been in them. They haven't been, like, blowouts or anything like that. Even Monday's game, Game 4, a game where they really completely got outplayed. They tie it on the shorthanded goal. It's 2-2, and all of a sudden it's like, how the hell are they even in this game? So it's not like they're completely getting blown out. If they got 10%, as little as 10% from their top line or someone like Krejci, they're winning this series.
And that's part of the reason why I'm not sold on this Blues team. Everyone thinks I'm insulting the Blues. No, I'm just saying that if these teams play their talent levels, it's not close. It's really not. It's when you look at the scores of the games, look at how these games are tied up late or it's a one-goal game late. I understand that that doesn't tell you everything, but it tells you that if the Bruins get something, to your point, 10%, they're winning the series. They're winning these games. And I looked this up because it took me all of 10 seconds, Craig, in case you want to go look this up on your own time. Through three rounds of postseason play, the Blues were the second most penalized team in the NHL. So
Berube's talking out of his ass.
He's completely talking out of his ass. Yes, 100%. So, you know, I don't know, Craig. The internet's free. You can use it whenever you like.
Go to Kevin in New Hampshire. You're next here with Ty Anderson and Jim Murray. Hey, Kevin. Hello, Kevin.
Can't even see. Never mind.
Yeah, your phone stinks. And with that, you know what? Let's push away. I know when a table goes cold, and I'm going to push away because when I get a call like that, I know the next three are going to be right in the toilet with it. Yeah, the table's gone cold. I know. I'm a smart enough gambler, I'd like to think. Okay, with that, we're going to wrap up. Enough sports. Ty, you know how this normally goes if you've listened with any regularity to Gasper Murray here. The final segment is five questions for Chris Gasper. Got nothing to do with sports. Without Chris Gasper, you're filling in, so get ready for that. You don't know what the questions are. I'm going to pop them at you bang, bang, bang style. So we're going to do that to wrap up next here on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5 the Sports Hub.
I got five questions for Chris Gasper of the Globe. I got five questions that got nothing to do with sports. I got five questions.
Five! One, two, three, four, five!
I got five questions. I hope this segment ain't too wack.
As I look up here, and I know we're not supposed to be talking sports in this segment, the Red Sox are already down 4-0 in this game to Tampa Bay. God, they stink. Okay, five questions for Chris Gasper. Got nothing to do with sports, but no Chris Gasper. We have Ty Anderson, 98.5 of SportsHub.com, and a five-tool player here at 98.5 of SportsHub. Let's dive right in, Ty. Question number one. The success of the HBO miniseries Chernobyl, which is great, by the way, has driven up the number of tourists wanting to see the site of the 1986 nuclear power plant disaster. Visits to Normandy also up, given this year's the 75th anniversary of D-Day. Are there any historical places that you, Ty Anderson, would like to visit that you have on your bucket list?
Yeah, there's actually a few. But mainly I want to go to... Well, it's not really historical, actually. I just want to see the Northern Lights. So if there's anything near that that's historical, bring me there.
I would definitely want to go there. There's so many places. I feel like such an uncultured slob.
Same.
I've seen most of this country. I've been lucky to do that. But like any of like the real cool historical places or anywhere like the Northern Lights, like I've never been to. And I'd like to see a lot of the places that are historical horrors, left over from World War II. I think it's important to go to the concentration camps and see that so you can see the worst of humanity up close so that it's not repeated, even though the world seemingly gets worse by the day. But I'd like to like go to Auschwitz. I would like to go to Normandy, all that kind of stuff. Like, that's bucket list for me.
I want to go to a ghost town. Like, that's what I want to do. If there's like a ghost town in America.
What do you mean, like a ghost town? Like a like old west?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I want to do, because that stuff's kind of cool to me.
You can find some of that. So I went to Cody, Wyoming once, which the population I think is like 60. That it looks like you go back into the 1800s. It doesn't even make sense. So yeah, you'll be able to do that.
I want to do that, yeah.
Question number two. Can you further explain this tweet? I saw this last night from you, Ty Anderson. Hey man, quick shout out to Butterfinger for ruining Butterfingers. Their new recipe is trash. Why? Too crunchy? Too sweet? What's the problem with the new Butterfinger?
It tastes like a protein bar.
Oh.
It's really gross now. They put peanuts in it now.
There's literal actually chunky
peanuts? So they say like they added peanut butter or something to it. Or they just have peanuts now on the cover, which there were never peanuts on the cover growing up. It's not good. It's really bad. I ate it and I even handed it to my girlfriend and I was like, have a bite of this. This is gross. And she's like, oh, well, I don't want to eat this. I said, no, you got to eat this. And she goes, yeah, these are bad now. I'm like, yep, they've ruined Butterfingers.
That was a candy bar that didn't need to be screwed with. And when I've seen the advertisements, like, why did you need to screw with a Butterfinger? Like, no one's ever complained about a Butterfinger. They're fine.
Like Skittles, get rid of lime and bring in a green apple. Great move. That's a great move. Butterfinger? You don't got to touch it. Why are you doing that?
You almost prompted me to go get one last night, but the problem is I am not young like you, Ty, and I eat candy now, and I want to die 5 minutes later. Question number three. Since Amazon probably knows everything about you by now, why not let it track your emotions as well? The company is said to be working on a wearable wellness device that's able to determine a user's emotional state. Is this going too far?
Yeah, I don't need anything to tell me I'm sad. I know I'm sad.
Right. Just
I live this life.
All I need to do is wake up in the morning. Still feel the same miserable way.
Yep, exactly. I don't need that. No, we're getting to it. This is becoming Minority Report. I don't like it.
It's an episode of Black Mirror. Like I don't know if you watch that on Netflix. Can't recommend that enough. But it's getting more and more like that with each passing day. And I recently read this article about the facial recognition technology that they've adopted in the Chinese government. Read about that if you want to get terrified, because that is coming. Ugh. Question number four. If you could live in any TV show house, Ty, which one would it be? Will and Grace's apartment, Full House House, Jetsons?
Are those my options? Or?
No, pick away.
I'd live with Alf. That'd be my best friend.
I don't remember the
Hanging
Alf
out with Willie and Alf. Oh, man. We'd have so much fun.
Aren't you too young for that? How the hell do you remember that?
I love Alf.
Wow.
I want to get an Alf tattoo on my thigh eventually.
Oh, make that happen. Mine would be the Brady Bunch house, by the way. I'm old enough to remember that when it was rerun all the time. It's like the perfect middle-class house, and I loved their cheesy backyard with the fake grass so I could throw a football at Marsha's face too. That's the house I would live in. Finally, as we wrap, just in time for summer events, Live Nation has recently begun adding a surcharge of between $5 and $30 for aisle seats, Ty, labeling them as premium aisle seats. They include the seat at the end of each row, as many as three additional seats further into the row, so it's not just the aisle seats. Ticketmaster promoting them as an option for fans who are looking to enjoy the convenience of easy access to refreshments, restrooms, and venue exits. When you buy tickets to a concert or any other event, do you specifically look for aisle seats? And what do you think about this whole plan as a whole, keeping in mind that they're very likely one of the sponsors here at 98.5 Sports Hub?
Well, keeping that in mind, great idea. I'm going to buy five right now. No, I don't care about the aisles. I mean, most of the shows I go to don't even have that. You know, I'm a grimy punk and hardcore kid. We just go in the mosh pit.
So I need because I need to like stretch out my legs, I need the aisle seats. I'm surprised this hasn't happened earlier. I mean, I'm all for capitalism, but I mean, this is getting out of control. And I'll tell you what it's going to lead to, which I can't believe hasn't happened yet. The airlines charging more for aisle seats. Because for tall people like me, I always choose the aisle seat because I can stretch out a little bit more and cheat. All right, with that, Ty, it's been a pleasure.
This is awesome.
Yeah, let's do it again sometime. What do you get the rest of the day?
I don't know. I'm going to go to Salem, get a burrito at Howling Wolf, have myself a day. They got a few comic shops up there. I'm basically an 11-year-old, in case anyone hasn't picked up on that yet.
I mentioned earlier, check out that Goodnight Fatty. They're just a mom-and-pop little cookie operation. They sell, like, hot cookies and milk. It's awesome up there. So enjoy the rest of your beautiful Saturday, and the weekend, and good luck to the Bruins tomorrow night. We have Christian Arkin coming up next. What's up, Arkin?
What's going on, Ty? You going to Salem, Mass, or Salem, New Hampshire?
Mass.
Check out the Felt Fanatic while you're up there.
What is that?
It is a really cool store. It's this little store. This guy runs it, and it's all this old vintage. They got old pennants and really cool old sports gear, and just it's right up your alley. I think you'd really like
for
it.
For how you dress? Yeah. So I follow this dude on Instagram, Felt Fanatic. He's like a guy your age that's opened a shop that sells like 90s vintage sports gear. So, like, you'd be able to find, like, an old...
Really obscure stuff, too. Yeah,
the satin jackets from the... starter jackets from the 90s. Like, he's got all that junk.
I'm going to come in looking like a member of Criss Cross on Monday, and it's going to be awesome.
Right, you could probably find Alf gear there, too.
Oh, check him out. Don't tease me like that.
What are you... you going to be leading off Bruins?
Yes, we'll be doing Bruins most of the day. Marissa and Jemmy from the Herald's going to join us at 4 o'clock, and we may take a break to talk about this sucky baseball team and also Kyrie Irving going to Brooklyn. We'll have all of those things and your calls till 5 o'clock.
Yeah, I thought, you know, I thought they were back after they swept Kansas City. Don't let them get hot, these Red Sox. Funny, anytime they play a real team, they lose. All right, Arkan's got you up next here. You want to join him, 617-779-0985. He'll be joined by Sean Silver as well. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Go Bees, and hopefully we'll be talking about a Game 7 come Monday on Felger and Mazz. Bye.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing. And FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy, make your first bet an automatic win. with FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Be honest, wouldn't you like to play more golf this year? As the State Golf Association for Massachusetts, Mass Golf is ready to help, and they want you to become a member. By joining, you'll automatically get a handicap index from the USGA, access to play exclusive private clubs through Mass Golf events, and a bundle of additional benefits. Best of all, it costs just $55 to join. Visit massgolf.org and make today a golf day.
Hey, it's Maz. Are you tired of small inconveniences that always turn into big headaches at home? Well, my friends at Rodenizer Home Services can make small fixes like repairing leaky faucets, adding or replacing electrical outlets and lights, or clearing slow drains that will provide big comfort for your home. And with over 10,000 five-star reviews, Rodenizer's expert technicians are just a call away and ready to fix those inconveniences at your home. Experience the difference with Rodenizer Home Services. Visit Rodenizer.com to schedule today. That's Rodenizer Home Services. Nice people, great service since 1928.